Welcome to episode 156 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. Regular listeners will know that over the past few years, I've recorded and shared some lively conversations with a gentleman called Hugh Graham. Now, Hugh was one of my university lecturers, and then subsequently a colleague and friend. Well, it's with great sadness that I now have to share the news that Hugh recently passed away. In the end, he was something of a father figure to me, so you can probably imagine that this has hit me rather hard. I'd hoped to bring you this podcast last week, but I just couldn't bring myself to sound upbeat enough, and I'm sure you understand. But, as they say, the show must go on, and in this week's edition, I'm sharing one of the two remaining conversations that Hugh and I recorded. So first up, it's the matter of making money from selling your pictures and the various technical concerns that you might have. So, welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 156. So once again, I am sat with Hugh Graham, my one-time lecturer and colleague, and we've just been talking about writing and photography and all that sort of thing. So that's got us to thinking about selling pictures and how you go about this. And we'll touch on editorial, and because a lot of people listening to this are wanting to make money from their weekends and from their camera, and not everyone can afford or justify going out and trying to become a photographer full-time. And a lot of people start off shooting at the weekends and what have you, but it is nice to be able to make a few quid as you go along. So this is a bit of a thing, Hugh. I'm going to give you the opening gambit on this one again.
Right, okay. So I'm taking it that we're going to ignore commercial photography, like photographing boring things like mountain bikes and new cars and stuff, which basically you need a huge studio, enough lights to light London, and other stuff like that, which doesn't interest me whatsoever.
Yeah, we'll make this one a bit more accessible to the mainstream, shall we say?
All right. So then, basically, you come down to two things, don't you? You're either going to shoot for stock, or you're going to shoot to illustrate editorial. And editorial, of course, has a very broad spectrum, because a huge number of still pictures are used on television. And they add lustre to the news item. And of course, the radio stations have their own websites, and they use still pictures too. So there's a huge market for still photography just on its own. And let's not forget that if you look at the broadsheets, by that I mean the Independent, the Times, the Telegraph and so on the weekends, and also, of course, to a certain extent during the week, they are using standalone pictures just because they're beautiful. And they so you have to produce the picture itself and, of course, the caption. Which brings you very neatly into writing. So, I am a writer who became a photographer. I am not a photographer that became a writer. And it may well be that a number of people who are listening to this podcast are photographers who want to write, or who think that maybe they could write, or maybe even that they should write. And there are a number of writers who think, yeah, okay, well, I can take a decent snap, so maybe we can put the two together. So, since you left Surrey Institute, have you written many articles, and have you illustrated those articles with your own pictures? And is this a field of activity that you found either mentally rewarding or financially rewarding? In other words, have you done what I told you to do in the first place?
No, because I went off and became a commercial photographer.
Yes. Boring. Yeah, go on.
But no, it is very rewarding. And I remember when I was at university, I would read either the Guardian or Independent on a Saturday, not because of any political allegiance to the news values of those papers, but just because the photography was of a very high standard. And I remember looking at those articles in those weekend supplements, thinking, I would love to have a photo feature or illustrate something like that. That, of course, is what, as well as shooting commercially, that is something that I've, as we've discussed before, what I've come around to thinking in more recent years is how I want to be moving forward and what have you. Everything's always very fluid. But I think one of the important things to remember is, and we spoke about this previously, is that a lot of people think that to have saleable images, you need to have some sort of whiz-bang, amazing camera kit. But you don't have to. It's the content and what have you that is going to be the important factor. So you mentioned about...
Hang on, listen. Let's just interrupt you for a minute.
Right.
And I am certain I have made this point to you on one of your podcasts before.
Mm.
Can you imagine being in the Tate Gallery with some wonderful painting being looked at by admiring artists, and they say, well, I wonder what sort of brush he used.
Yeah.
And then what sort of canvas or stretcher did he use?
Mm.
No one gives a damn, do they?
No.
They just love the picture.
Yeah.
Now, if you go to a photographic exhibition and you're looking at some really superb images up there, how many times have you heard anybody say, I wonder what sort of film he is, or what sort of camera he was using, or do you suppose that was shot at f8 or f5.6? Have you ever heard that?
No.
People are only interested in the image. So, I can remember when I interviewed David Bailey. David Bailey said, what photographers really need is a magic finger, and they point at the subject, and they then get the image that they imagined in their head. That would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you can actually do that with a compact camera.
And that's something that we have spoken about previously. And at this precise moment, that recording that we made hasn't gone live yet.
Yeah.
But it could, if I'm clever, I will keep it chronological and that will have already gone out. But, of course, when you're talking about, and you have more experience than I do of approaching picture libraries, for example, there is an image... the quality of photographs is very important. Now, that's not to say that you can't shoot high quality pictures on very modest equipment, but surely then to get the most out of that equipment, just basic technique like holding the camera steady, making sure things are sharp.
Get a tripod.
But if you don't have a tripod, how you get around it?
You still go and get a tripod. If you can't hold the camera steady, because I mean, you must have watched old boys of about 82, which I'm not too far from.
Not quite, yeah.
You're sitting there with Parkinson's disease, and the hammer and the cameras are shaking like washing in the wind.
Mm.
And the only way they're going to get a sharp image is to use a cable release and a tripod. However, having said that, most decent compact cameras have got a tripod bush underneath, so you can shove it on that, or use one of those wonderful clamps that you can clamp around anything.
Yeah. But we were looking earlier today at some tear sheets of an article that you'd written, and one of them was, by your own admission, a complete happy accident. It was a technical failure.
Oh, that was my was my picture of martial arts, wasn't it?
But it was the perfect shot.
It was brilliant, wasn't it?
That's cool.
Yes, and it was a complete accident.
Would you like to elaborate on...
No, I'm ashamed of it. But seriously, it was a picture I did of some kids doing a practice in judo. And there was a red light. And I was fascinated by the silhouette created. And there wasn't enough light, so I had to use a slow shutter speed, so the whole thing's blurred, but it's fantastic.
Mm.
And it captured the the magic of martial arts, didn't it?
And you probably weren't half as ashamed once the cheque came in.
And anyway, I looked at this and I thought, actually, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And I did send it off to the magazine saying, I think this will work.
Yeah.
But I didn't tell them it was an accident.
No.
I said it would have a carefully contrived picture, of course.
Of course.
But it was. So many of my pictures have been accidents.
Mm. But I do think, again, I know we've talked about it in the past, everyone's so concerned about high quality, high definition, high resolution and perfect, the technology and advancements and all this sort of thing. But you should be open to embracing, especially if you're looking at what we're talking about here is making sales on pictures. You should be open to the idea that rather than taking a picture and thinking, oh, that's not quite right, and deleting it straight away, keep it on the memory card till you get back home. When you look at it on the computer, you might think, actually, that's worth keeping, you know, just in case.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think... I think photography is not unlike an old Harris tweed jacket. I have a wonderful old Harris tweed jacket with leather patches on the elbows, and my wife doesn't like it. And she has sold that jacket at jumble sales 3 times. And I have bought it back each time. I've even bought my own jacket back because I like the thing so much. And I think photography should be much the same, because if you get used to a particular lens and you love it and you love what it does and you know what you can do with it, why on earth would you change it? And the same thing applies to camera bodies. If you actually know exactly what you can get out of that photography, out of that particular camera body, and we all know they behave differently, so you get two identical cameras and one is completely different in what it delivers than the other. And so if you've got equipment which you love, why on earth change it?
I mean, one of my favourite setups, I have two prime lens. For those that don't know, prime lenses are ones that you don't vary the focal length. You actually have to use your legs to move wider or closer to the subject. I have a 50mm and I have a 35mm. Now, technically, they are not perfectly compatible with my cameras, because yes, they're all Nikons and what have you, however, and no comments about Nikon versus Canon.
Thank you. It.
Rubbish. But
Canon is obviously superior.
There we go. But the certainly the 35mm lens, because it's a DX format, for people that are interested in this sort of thing, a DX format as opposed to an FX, you do get slight vignetting, and it gets gradually worse or better around the edges. Now, sometimes you think, actually, that works quite well. If I'm shooting in a woodland and it's quite dark in the corners anyway, it kind of adds to
the mystery.
Yeah, and you don't have to put vignettes in if you wanted to in post-production. However, because of the quality of the sensor and the resolution, you can just frame that picture knowing that you are going to crop out that little area. But just using those two lenses, I would love to shoot a whole year of assignments just on those two lenses. And when you see those pictures being published and being used, knowing that, again, going back to the whole idea of saleable images, it was your creativity that has...
Yeah, but then went back to a sing and dance routine that we've been through several times before. One of my heroes is Henri Cartier-Bresson. And he shot on a Leica with a 50mm lens. That's all he ever used. And he never used anything else. And his pictures are held up as examples of how to be a proper photojournalist.
Well, as Robert Capa has said, if your pictures aren't good enough, you're not close enough.
That's right, true. Yes.
Now, the irony is, he died by standing on a landmine.
Yeah.
Well, or on a bomb or something. That's right, yes. Triggered everything. Yeah. Which is a great irony, but notwithstanding, the sentiments of what he was saying is spot on.
Yeah.
You know.
How many times have you been out on a shoot? On one of these boring commercial shoots, yeah? Where you sit there. And how much time do you waste deciding what lens to shoot on?
Depending on the assignment, sometimes you can spend quite a bit of time.
Yes. And it would, if you've only got one camera body and one lens, it solves itself, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you walk closer or you stand further away.
Yeah.
And it, and you keep the same perspective.
Yeah.
And the whole beauty about the 50mm lens is as close to the human eye as you can get.
Mm. And your client doesn't, unless they're a keen photographer, maybe in their spare time, they don't actually care. They might look at your camera and say, cool, that looks expensive, which is often the case.
Which, obviously that's important because you have to justify the fee.
Oh yeah, you have to look the part. but no, a lot of people, you know, the sort of kit that I use, that you use, isn't going to be accessible to them for one reason or another. But actually getting out there and taking the pictures and getting an appreciation of what is going to sell within the area that you're aiming at, that is the craft, more so almost than the technique.
I think that you can encourage all those people who are listening to this podcast to spend 6 months using nothing other than a standard lens.
Mm.
And their photography will improve probably 200%.
Mm.
Because they will learn what the camera body does, they will learn what that lens does, they learn what they can do and what they can't do with it.
Mm.
And they will learn how to adapt the equipment to the to the photographic opportunity at that time.
Mm.
And you don't have to spend your time wondering what lens to use.
Mm.
Or which body to use.
And in a real world sense, if you're out in the middle of a field or taking your dog for a walk or what have you, and you want to take a picture, if it's pouring down with rain or if the wind is howling around and there's lots of dust throughout, you don't really want to be changing your lenses to get the camera inside. No. or mucky.
You don't.
So you think, okay, I know my camera, whatever camera it might be, is up to the job with these conditions.
Yeah.
You just have to think, right, I want to record this, how am I going to do it?
Yep.
You know.
So in the end, what I guess we're suggesting is that you get hold of a decent compact camera, or you get hold of a full frame.
Mm.
And a 50mm lens.
Mm.
Is that what we're suggesting?
It could be. The whole full frame thing.
So this is going to enrage all the people selling supplementary lenses.
Yeah.
And cameras who are, yeah.
But it's interesting, the full frame thing, I have never concerned myself much with that whole question.
Yeah.
I think, is the viewfinder nice and bright? Does it give me a good sense of what I'm shooting?
Yeah.
Am I happy with the results? And even if it's not a perfect matchup, it's in the same way that, going way, 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 way back, Julia Margaret Cameron, a pioneer of photography, at a time when women weren't really,
yeah,
you know, involved like that. Among her personal friends, people like Darwin and Tennyson, mm-hmm. when she was living on the Isle of Wight, off the south coast of the UK, she had the money and the resources to have the best equipment that she could use. However, people look at her pictures now and think, God, look at how soft they are, these pictures, and the quality wasn't so good. A lot of people don't realise she actually defaced her lenses.
Yeah.
She scraped them and, yeah, you know, what have you, to give a soft... Now, of course, you would just get a filter and scratch that up and put it on the front and save the lens. But from what I understand, she actually went that stage further and she created that.
Wasn't she the lady who bought clear filters and put them on the lens and smeared them with Vaseline?
She might well have tried something similar. I don't know, yeah, whether an equivalent of Vaseline was around at the time, but she was using her equipment that she had to realise the images she wanted to produce. Now, we're talking
back to David Bailey's magic, yeah, finger, isn't it?
So we're talking about creating images that you want to realise those images to sell, and those images are going to illustrate whatever because you know it's going to sell. I don't think she was inclined to do that. It was just the art of photography.
Yeah, but on the other hand, what you've actually just said, albeit in an extraordinarily roundabout way,
mm,
is the fact that she knew her equipment so well that she was able to persuade it to generate the image that she saw in her head.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, you can't do that if you're working with a battery of lenses and two or three different bodies and and oh, Lord knows what number of filters. But you, I'm sure the answer to really good photography is to have one body, one lens, and learn how to use them to the maximum advantage in any photographic situation. And only when you've mastered that should you then go and explore maybe different sensor sizes or different lenses.
And there will be a lot of people that will immediately be saying, what about Photoshop? Now,
what about Photoshop?
A lot of people would argue that
I'd much rather talk about Lightroom.
Or Lightroom, or but okay, post-production, let's call it. Because it's true that the camera, for a lot of people, myself included, although I don't use a, do a lot of post-production, the camera is the first...
I suppose your photographs don't need it.
Of course not.
Yeah, right. If you believe that, you'll believe anything.
I'm modest like you, you see. But it, it, the camera's that first... that it captures the image, that's your starting point. And for a lot of people, the emphasis for them is not on the capture of the picture, it is what they do in post-production. Not that they're looking to save a picture because it's a technically poor shot to begin with, but you're, as you were saying, in your mind's eye, envisioning what this image is going to look like, they use Photoshop, just like an artist would use different paints or different brushes to create that final look.
Who's actually saying this?
Who is saying it?
Yeah, who is? Who are these people who keep on making these strange suggestions?
Oh, people...
apart that, from them.
It's... they're all out there, Hugh.
Yeah, fine. They've always been out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was... it, in the days when I can remember wet and dry dark rooms, we would get hold of the image, we would use different developers, we would use different temperatures, we would use dodging things, we would move our hands underneath the lens, we'd have dodging tools and burning in tools and everything. There's no difference between what we did then and what they do in Photoshop now. So why has it changed? It hasn't changed. We are distorting the image.
Yeah.
And we're distorting it in the darkroom, now we're distorting it in Photoshop.
This, the theory that the camera never lies, it has always lied, so long as the person behind it has
the camera lies. We just make the images lie. But we always have done.
Yeah.
So once you've got the image, then what do you do with it?
I suppose if we're talking about selling pictures, there will be certain markets which require or favour a certain look or a certain subject matter, that applying certain techniques to the subject is what is going to enable you to make those sales.
Yes. So I think certainly I think there are so many libraries now. There's even a library for iPhone cameras. I mean,
for those pictures. Absolutely. So, because the people that initially kicked off saying this isn't photography and you can't take decent pictures on your cameras, what have you, well, that has been proven that you can, and there are all the various applications and things that allow you to be more creative, even just within the phone itself.
Well, let's not call them decent pictures.
We should just pause there. So both of us have forgotten exactly what we were talking about because we've had people coming in here and
phone
calls and your dog as well. But
a very large German Shepherd called Spike.
Fierce creature.
Fierce, he might nick you to death.
Well, yeah. But let's just, we'll round things off because we've got to go and do other things like lunch.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah.
Very, very important. So yes, selling images... What are our parting thoughts on this?
Because we were actually talking about the fact that there were now libraries for iPhone pictures and so on. And okay, so due to the dreadful advance of citizen journalism, it is the reality of the image and not the quality of it which is acceptable to the media.
Mm.
So it's another reason for not bothering about equipment.
Mm.
So if you've got a camera which takes a half decent photograph, then there's no point in changing it because there's going to be no advantage to it. So it's much better to learn your camera and to learn the capability of that lens than move on to some other exotic piece of equipment which you will then introduce an entirely new learning curve to.
And if you're looking to make quick sales off quick pictures, i.e. when you're out and about and you see something and you need to quickly grab it, if you're trying to learn another camera technology or something, you're going to miss the shots anyway.
That's true.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you carry a Panasonic Lumix DMC LX3, which you can pick up on the internet for around 80 quid, you can get wonderful pictures and it slips in your pocket and you don't have to worry about anything. And it has a Leica 2 lens.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is the person that when he was shooting Minolta cameras and getting a very good agreement with the chaps at Minolta, said they were the best thing since sliced bread.
They were at that time, because I was shooting on film.
There we go. And with Canon were always better. And now he's moved on. He's going to the brand. He's on some Panasonic Lumix.
Yes, but I don't like the Canon compact cameras.
Fair enough.
And that includes the G10, the G9, and the whatever they are.
Yes, yeah, up to, what is it,
12? Because they all shake. And you can't get anything in unless you're shooting anything worthwhile, in my humble opinion, providing you're shooting at ISO 80 or below.
Yeah. Well then, I'm sure there are probably more questions to come out of that.
Now I'm going to get sued by Canon.
Well, yeah. There are probably more questions to come out of that than we've answered. So if there are some gaps that you would like us to cover, we can always follow this up in another podcast. Yes. But for now, Hugh, thank you very much for your wisdom and honesty. Apparently that's what people really enjoy about these chats. Okay, so fine. There we go. But we'll catch up soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Of course, I'll bring you my final conversation with Hugh soon. In the meantime, I know that these conversations have always been a favourite with listeners of this podcast, so I'd really love to hear how Hugh's words of wisdom have helped you along with your photography over the past few years. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast.